A glorious band, the chosen few, on whom the Spirit came. 12 valiant saints, their hopes they knew, and mocked the cross and flame. They met the tyrant's brandished steel, a lion's glory shall guard, one faithful heart shall praise thee. The minstrel fell, but the foeman's chains could not bring his proud soul under. The harp he loved ne'er spoke again, for he tore its chords asunder. And said, no chain shall sully thee, thy soul of love and bravery. Thy song was made for the pure and free, and shall never sound in slavery. Thy song was made for the pure and free, and shall never sound in slavery.
Hello, this is Kevin Annett, and you are listening to Here We Stand. We shall never sound in slavery. Is that a tall order? Somebody once asked another person, why do you keep banging your head against a wall? And the other one answered, well, because it feels so good when I stop. Well, from the outside, what we as people of conscience and action do may seem to be a relentless round of headbanging as we try to bring down centuries-old systems of oppression and violence. But here's the thing. If we bang against any wall long enough, it will topple no matter what we're using to bang it with. And the more people who are banging it, the quicker it'll fall. That's why we're gathered here today and every week. I've discovered that none of us ever finds our purpose easily or clearly or intentionally. Usually it falls on our heads like a hammer, and then we have to try to sort things out in the midst of all the hammering. The important thing is to try to do so, and to keep doing so, and to never give up. Today's story epitomizes this task, this purpose for the chosen few. Maybe you're one of those who are listening today. If so, this message is especially for you. Today we have back with us Patricia Bland. She's a woman from Portlaoise in Ireland. That's the central area of Ireland, west of Dublin. 3 weeks ago, on February 18th, we had her on. Her children, all three of them, have been taken from her side. They've been gone for 6 months. They were taken by this agency, this corporation called TUSLA, which gets oodles and oodles of money from the Irish government to steal and traffic children. The children are Gavin, Caitlin, and Jack. And for a long time, Patricia has been struggling to get them back. In our last interview with her, she described how difficult it is, how she's getting blocked on every front. And get this, and this is interesting because the show today is actually being monitored by the Irish government and its security services. How do we know that? Well, because a Justice Walsh, the last time Patricia was in court, Justice Walsh informed her, quote, you're not to speak anymore on Canadian radio. And later in the day, Justice Walsh also said, I don't recognize your rights. We don't care about your constitutional rights. Well, there you have it, people. But I found it interesting that they knew about the show and they're listening to today, obviously. I guess it's an offense to talk about what goes on in Irish courts now, especially involving this TUSLA agency. Interestingly, TUSLA is not allowed to be reported in the Irish newspapers. Any journalist who describes events in a family court and names the names of children or TUSLA agents or whatever, that journalist can go to jail for 3 years. Interesting, eh? I think you act like that when you have something to hide. So we're going to go into that in more detail today. We're going to have Patricia back on with us and her friends, John Moran, Mary Kelly, Gene Walsh, and undoubtedly other folks, because, you know, in Ireland, when you open the door, it's like working with native people. When you open the door and ask people to talk, stand back. I know from personal experience and from my own family. And we're going to be hearing about what's going on recently with Patricia's case and how they want to expand the campaign to address the whole global industry of child trafficking sponsored by that unholy trinity of church, state, and big money. Now, it's interesting because this leads up, of course, to Operation Atonement starting April 15th, the campaign to actually stop once and for all these murderous church corporations. And not only have had a history of genocide, but also they're continuing to traffic children and engage in criminal acts all over the planet. Operation Atonement starts on April 15th with teach-ins, with the serving of notices to church officials. April 30th, Beltane, the Irish tradition of Beltane, that's when the direct action starts. People will be performing citizen arrests on known child-raping priests. They'll be pressuring their governments to stop giving tax exemptions to these murderous churches, the Catholic Church, the Church of England, the United Church in Canada, and also to go to their insurance companies and saying, you do not have the right to underwrite church corporations that have blood on their hands and are murdering children, laundering money for the mafia, and so on. So in other words, a big public campaign to pressure and expose these churches. We've proven in the past that even a few dozen of us can force this change in Canada, can even make a pope resign, Ratzinger, on February 11th, 2013. Imagine if more of us were involved in this. It works, people. So get on board with us. Write to thecommonland@gmail.com or itccsoffice@gmail.com. Talking to Mary Kelly, one of the things that they did last time around was they went into Pro Cathedral. That's the main cathedral in Dublin, where a lot of this felonious activity goes on. And right in the middle of the service, the Archbishop Dermot Martin was standing there in all his big robes and regalia. And these folks had T-shirts on saying, "Remember the Stolen Babies." They walked up to the front of the cathedral during the service. They stood there facing the congregation with their shirts on. And, of course, the shit hit the fan, just like it did whenever we do anything like that. But the important thing is, and here's an interesting anecdote, in 2 weeks, Palm Sunday, March 25th, will be the 10th anniversary of, yes, that wonderful occasion when a whole whack of us, me and a bunch of wild Indians, walked into the Holy Rosary, so-called Holy Rosary Cathedral in downtown Vancouver, the big flagship of the Catholic Church on the West Coast. And we did the same thing. We stood with our banner, "All the Children Need a Proper Burial." We stood in front of the congregation. And not only did the priest freak out, I remember one of them came up behind me and the so-called man of God put me in an arm lock, tried to force me out of the building. But interestingly, just a couple of weeks later, the Canadian government collapsed, and they began to announce that they would start looking for the missing Aboriginal children. Of course, they never did, but they had to say that for the folks in the media. And they began the whole process of so-called Truth and Reconciliation Commission. That happened because of those direct actions. We embarrassed them. We struck where they were vulnerable, on their Sunday collection plate and their public image. We've got to keep doing that. We're going to do this globally now, not just in one or two cities, but all over the place. And interesting, Don just wrote me and says, "I can't reach John Moran on Skype." Well, we're going to hope that he can, and if not, we will carry this on anyway. It wouldn't surprise me that there is Skype disruption, because this is the way they operate. We know the Irish government's monitoring this, and wouldn't put it all past them, they and their TUSLA buddies, to disrupt any further discussion of this. Police state operations, where they actually have a gag order now on Patricia. The judge placed a gag order on her and said, "You can't talk on Canadian radio, you can't talk about any of this stuff going on." Patricia told me this last week that, no, we're going ahead anyway with the interview. And we will. Now, a couple of other announcements. I'm actually looking at two books. and one written by me and one written by my father, Bill Annett, both on Amazon.com. You know about my recent book, At the Mouth of a Cannon. And the reason I want to mention this in these two books is because in the Mouth of a Cannon, it's about how the church, the state, and the big money grabbed the land of the West Coast Native people in Canada, the Housed Nation, and many other nations. One of the ways they did that was by working with the Aboriginal chiefs themselves. And, you know, they bought off, as they always do, a section of the Native leadership to turn against the traditionalists. And it's interesting because in my father's book, it's called Watershed. It's a fictional account of something that occurred in the 1990s in British Columbia, where a big water export company was set up, and there was a lot of corruption involved, a lot of government inside trading going on involving Prime Minister Mulroney, Premier Van Der Zand in British Columbia, a lot of corruption. And Dad describes this in his book, so I really urge you to get it. It's a great, hilarious read, Watershed by William Annett on Amazon.com, At the Mouth of a Cannon by Kevin Annett. On Amazon. Just put our names in and they'll both come up. Because the reason I mention that is there have been protests and actions recently in Vancouver against the Kinder Morgan pipeline. And just yesterday, March 10th, there was a protest. And it was significant because it was led by Native people. But not Native people only, it was their chiefs. And I've seen this happen before in the various protests. The Native leadership, that is the state-funded, government-run Native leadership, step in and take over the protest. And then suddenly it's turned off, or they make a deal with the corporation. And in fact, the same thing happened in Standing Rock over the pipeline there. The Native leadership announced, well, we've come to an agreement with the company, and for certain benefits going in the direction of the chiefs, the protest was called off. It's called redwashing. It's how corporations control political movements now. They just put one or two token Indians at the head of it, like they put one or two token Indians on their boards. And all us guilty liberal whites are afraid to take it on because there's a Native face on it now. So be aware of that when you're looking at all these protests. Who is running it? Where is the money coming from? Etc. Just going to check with Don now if you can hear me. Yes, the contact information for Jerron Miranda gave you is it. And I'm looking on my thing here, and he's not on either. So I think there could be something going on. What we could do, Don, I don't know if this will work, but I can give you a phone number for John right now. Do you think you could reach him by phone? Let me know. His phone number is coming to you as we speak. And I thank everyone for listening today especially. And for having patience here as we contend with the machinations of the Irish state and other people, undoubtedly, who are pulling their string. Hold on. I put that on the wrong site. Now, we also want to remind you folks that you can follow our work at itccs.org, murderbydecree.com, and hold on. I'm getting some feedback here. Just give me a moment. Okay, Don, I sent you the phone number right there if you want to try to get a hold of him by phone. I don't know if that'll work. Now, if we can't get a hold of John and everything, here's the thing. Go to our website, bbsradio.com/herewestand. And if you go back, you'll see if you scroll down halfway down the page, there is a description of all the programs. Go to February 18th, you'll see the show listed. You can listen to the first show with Patricia Bland and the Irish folks. It gives you a complete lowdown on TUSLA, this corporate agency, their struggle and everything. And we hopefully will get John on in a moment. And if not, well, we'll play something else. Also, another announcement I had. Let me pull up my papers here. Yes, one of the reasons we're doing this, too, is, you know, Operation Atonement and everything, is we are part of a bigger movement, and we found that over the years that it's not enough to do the obvious. We have to go beneath the surface of things and look at why do these things happen? Why, for example, are children being trafficked all over the place now in increasing numbers? Why the increasing amounts of child rape and murder going on? Well, we began in this work years ago with the whole thing of genocide. What is genocide? How does it work? The mechanics of it is it destroys the mother and child bond. that's specifically what it aims at, because that's the glue that holds together any culture. If you want to get the land of a people, you go after them with mother and child. And that's what they do. So whether it happens in Ireland or over here, that's what's going on. So you break up the family system, you attack mothers who are vulnerable, like single moms, Aboriginal moms. And it's interesting because notice where these attacks happen. The big assaults going on are in areas that traditionally were targets of corporate government church genocide. West coast of Canada, massive die-off of over 90% of the native people. So that's where all the residential schools are. That's where all the land grabs are going on. That's where all the chiefs are making big bucks by helping the land grab going on. Ireland, one-third of our people killed off in the so-called famine, which wasn't a famine because wheat and cattle in record numbers were being shipped out of Ireland all during the time that my people were starving to death. Loaded my great-grandfather and others onto coffin ships without food and shipped them over to Canada, where most of them were dead. Actually, my great-grandfather was an orphan when he landed in Montreal. So they target, and where the child trafficking is going on now is in these areas where traditionally the people were genocided, where, you know, the powers that be figure these people are too traumatized to fight back. But guess what? That's not the case when it comes to Ireland or with certain elements in the native population. So I was just told that John Moran's phone is busy and he can't come on Skype. So obviously, people, there's disruption going on. Don, what I'd suggest is, why don't we play the show from February 18th again, at least part of it. I know we're down to like 45 minutes now, but let's at least play most of it to the end. And I'm sorry for this, people. We will give you updates very soon. Go to our site, itccs.org, and we'll give you updates there, but I'll do my best to have these folks back next week with us and back on again, because one of the things we were going to talk about today was Patricia was going to describe how she's fed up with the court, she wants to broaden the campaign, and we're going to do this now, setting up our own common law courts. We're not going to tell you the details of the campaign in Ireland, but we're linking up with many other victims in that, and we're saying to hell with their system. It's set up to screw people. So, without further ado, what you're going to listen to now is our February 18th broadcast with Patricia Bland. It's self-explanatory. If you'd like to write us and get on board with the campaign at any level, write to thecommonland@gmail.com. And here's the interview from 3 weeks ago. Thanks, people, for your patience. We'll talk again next week. Stay tuned then. Be strong. Be clear. That's the Rebel Girl, and this is our Rebel Radio Show. Here we stand. I'm your host, Kevin Annett. Welcome back. That was Hazel Dickens singing, good bluegrass song, actually written by Joe Hill, the labor organizer, who was shot by the copper bosses in Utah in 1919, I guess, unless I'm wrong. But anyway, that's going out today, especially to our guests, and a woman who is leading the fight to win her children back, Patricia Bland. And Mary Kelly, John Moran, and Jean Walsh will all be joining us in a few minutes from Dublin, Ireland. And this show is also dedicated, for a poignant reason, to my great-grandfather, Daniel O'Neill, who was the sole survivor of his family after the British loaded him on a coffin ship and sent him out of Cork in the year 1880. They all died on the passage over. My great-grandfather landed an orphan in Montreal. And so, brothers and sisters, this genocide inflicted by the same power has afflicted all of us. And we stand on both sides of the waters with the victims of the genocide saying enough's enough. The way they're going after us now, and one of the major ways, is by, of course, going after our children. And today's program is going to be focusing on one aspect of that. A multinational corporation named Tusla is trafficking and harming children for mega profits, thanks to the Irish government. It seems to be beyond the law and protected in the media. But one woman is standing up to them, and she's facing attacks from the state for doing so. Patricia Bland is a single mother with three children. She'll join us today along with Mary, John, and Jean to talk about their struggle. It's Operation Atonement. April 15th, which is really focused on the same issue of child trafficking and the religious corporations, especially the Vatican, responsible. We have no better example of that than the present so-called Pope, Jorge Bergoglio, Bishop of Rome, who got his influence within the Catholic Church in Argentina by trafficking children of political prisoners, making billions of dollars for the Catholic Church, just like they did in Spain under the Franco dictatorship. They do this all over the world. And, of course, in Ireland, like in Canada with the native people, was a primary target for genocide. And they go after those populations that they figure can be controlled and manipulated better because they've been so traumatized. But Patricia and others today are a refutation of that idea. We show that our people in Ireland have never been crushed. We're fighting back still, especially today, for our children. The show today is also based on our three principles of natural law, which are very simple ideas, and that is nobody has the right to more of the earth than anyone else. No one has the right to have authority over anyone else, and we are to live at peace and help each other. Well, those three axioms are continually violated by the powers that be today. They are carving up the world to be owned by a few. They're exerting unnatural authority over us simply because they say that so, and they are conducting a war against all of us. So our answer is the natural law, those three principles. We hold them up now and always. Also, to remind you folks, you can write in anytime to us, thecommonland@gmail.com, follow our website, itccs.org, murderbydecree.com. And we are doing the show in partnership with Freedom Talk Radio Scotland and our brother there, Andy Peacher, living up in the far north coast of Scotland, doing that show every Sunday, Greenwich Mean Time, 7 p.m., and I share that broadcast with them. So we're reaching again to you folks across the waters as part of a common movement to reclaim our lives and our children. I want to throw a quote out to you today, and I got this. I was reading through a book on the anti-slavery movement. William Lloyd Garrison in the United States said in the year 1853, "The success of any great moral enterprise does not depend upon numbers," because we have a greater power behind us in this moral battle. Don't worry about the numbers, folks. We are orienting, especially in this Operation Atonement on April 15th, with a handful of us who have been able to make an effect. When you're striking at the levers of power, you have a greater influence than your numbers might suggest. And so a final note before we bring the folks on, we need conveners to help organize this in different cities. In Canada, for example, we have conveners already organizing training workshops and public teach-ins on the whole theme of these religious criminal bodies that we need to disestablish to protect our children. We have conveners in Vancouver, Kelowna, Edmonton, Winnipeg, but we need a lot more people to get on board. So if you want to volunteer to organize a local action group, the kind of action group that the folks in Ireland will undoubtedly have to be taking as well to confront these powers, if you want to be involved in that, write to us, thecommonland@gmail.com. And it's 8 minutes after the hour, and I hope they're on. I assume they're on because they were earlier. Are our friends with us, Don?
Absolutely.
Hi,
hello,
Kevin.
There.
Hi, Kevin.
They're there.
Hi.
Thank you. Well, I'll let you. I'll turn it over to you then. I want to just kind of ask all of you to say hi. And I want to start with Patricia, of course, and ask you, Patricia, to say something about yourself and your situation with your three children, Devin, Caitlin, and Jack.
I'm Patricia Bland. I'm a 31-year-old single mother from Portlaoise, Ireland. I've been having problems with Tusla Child and Family Agency for coming up to 2 years now. And they illegally took my kids to a closed court on the 15th of August, 2017. I'm a 31-year-old single mother from Portlaoise. I've been having trouble with Tusla Child and Family Agency coming up to 2 years now. They had a secret closed court that was held in Dolphin House in Dublin, with Judge Bernadette Owens, who illegally took my children with no paperwork. And to this day, my kids are actually still in care.
It's been like 6 months, I understand. August 15th they were taken?
Yeah, August 15th they were taken under Section 13 of the Child Care Act 1991, which was an emergency care order. And then they move swiftly on to Section 17, which is an interim care order every 28 days.
Well, why were they taken? What was the excuse they gave?
This taught me that my kids were chronically neglected. Hustler Child and Family Agency are actually after getting every test done on my kids, from blood tests to sexual abuse tests, and everything is after coming up 100%, and all this was actually done without my consent also.
So they're really doing this behind your back. What is the reason you think, look, we're going to talk about this agency, TUSLA, which is responsible. Why do you think that this has happened to them? Are you being, like, persecuted for some reason?
Yeah, well, it all actually basically in August, in about July 2016, I took really sick. And TUSLA was involved, and they missed two appointments that was actually scheduled for them. So it ended up that I was really sick, and two of my friends came in and helped me, and I ended up hospitalised. And I had surgery done, and I had 20-odd staples. And on the day of my release, TUSLA actually hit me for the first time and removed my kids under a Section 12 via a phone call. My kids, I was given a choice. They were put into the care of my mother and father, or they were put into the care of the HSE. I don't have a good relationship with my family, but to keep them out of the HSE care, I agreed for my kids at that time to go to the care of my mother and father. But again, there was never any paperwork or documents or anything signed or anything from that Section 12. And that was actually acted out by a team leader, Miss Dolores Mac, which later I looked up on a CURA registration site. It's to see what social workers are actually registered in Ireland to need a social worker number. And when I looked up Miss Dolores McDermott's name, she wasn't actually registered on CURU, so she wasn't a registered social worker.
Now, I understand this is happening to a lot of families in Ireland. TUSLA is going after a lot, and it's been in the news. It's a pretty controversial agency. Apparently, I read that, like, 90% of the cases they haven't even reviewed in the last 3 years. They don't even monitor children when they put them in these homes. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I have a document from TUSLA Child and Family Agency that I received about 4 weeks ago, and my kids are in care coming up to 6 months, and my kids were only visited three times in that 6 months.
Now, Patricia, I want to come back to you, but let me ask Mary or John or Jean, if any of you want to jump in now and comment on any of this, Patricia's case, or, you know, the whole issue of TUSLA. Feel free.
Well, I'd like to offer a comment. I've been examining the judiciary here in Ireland quite a bit lately. I do, for your listeners, I do an awful lot of research on laws, and it's quite clear there's a tremendous element of corruption in our judiciary. There's no transparency, fairness in provisions of statute law that the state are implementing. It's quite clear there are overlooking constitutional violations and people's rights, people's fundamental rights that we know, ironically, within a common law jurisdiction. They appear to be overlooking this. They appear to be a law unto themselves, where they make up their own rules as to what they're going to do. They appear to also circumvent due process, trial procedure. We have a lot of problems here in Ireland, not just in Ireland. It's quite clear many global nations are going through the same thing,
right,
particularly on this issue of children being taken away from families. I can like to elaborate what Patricia stated there. They have what they call an in-camera rule here, which is a closed family court. And it's quite deliberately done. It's quite clear it's manipulated. It's quite clear that the status quo, or the judiciary in this case, indicate that you know, all the procedures are not going to be dealt with properly, not going to be dealt with fairly and partially. Justice is not going to prevail here. It's clear that the in-camera rule leaves the situation open to corruption, verified under legislation that they argue that if anybody attempts to talk about procedures in a closed family court, they could be subject to €50,000, which is the equivalent, I guess.
For challenging a procedure, they're going to be fined €50,000.
€50,000, or be subject to 3 years jail time.
Oh my
so
God.
Here we have a situ- So here we have a situation where the judiciary is closing the proceedings. The mother in question here, Patricia, and many other mothers and families the same, are vulnerable. They're vulnerable because they are denied support. They are denied family support, support of what is known to be a McKenzie friend, any form of support that would indicate, you know, what's going on behind these closed courts. And it leaves young mothers and families in a very vulnerable position as a result.
Well, let me ask, I want to ask you one final question, then Patricia and the others can jump in again. But, John, why do you think this is happening right now in Ireland? Has this been a sudden change in the last few years, or have you seen it coming?
Well, it's through some recent research there, Jane, Mary, and Patricia, myself, and others are trying to do some extensive research. We have a big history of institutional abuse of children within the Irish state. It's quite clear that records indicate a number of abuses by the church, by the state, in covering up many actions perpetrated on young children, young families, down through the history here in Ireland. The reason why we're obviously looking into it and trying to establish it is, you know, what we're trying to address here is the credibility of the state, for instance, to implement the effectiveness of this TUSLA agency. Where did it come from? On the basis of what? You know, why was it created? Was it created for a genuine reason? Was it created for a commercial reason? Indications from research tell us that the relevant government department is a commercial operating company, you know, with a desire to make profit, and consequently statutory authority that they afford to TUSLA, the child and family agency in question, they too also are operating for profit. So here we have a situation where,
just a question, how much are they making? I remember you telling me this, I forget the exact number but one of you said they were making a certain amount for every child they put in a foster family. How much do you know?
Yes, Jane, do you want to elaborate on that?
They receive 20,000 per child that they put into foster care. So in Patricia's situation, she has three children in foster care, so that's 60,000 the state makes. Plus the foster parents themselves, in Patricia's situation, is making over 1,100 a week for the children, for the three children.
1,100 euros a week. For the foster parents. How much, just out of curiosity, how much would a mum on her own get from the state to support her child?
She'd be left with less than 900.
I was receiving 275 euros a week to run my house and to provide for three children and myself.
So you're making one quarter of what a foster parent would make.
One child.
They get 325 euro per week per child if they're under 12. Once they're over 12, they get 352 euro per week. And that's not including their children's allowance, which is 140 euro a month.
It sounds like they're trying to destroy the natural family bond to me.
Yeah, parental alienation, Kevin, is going. It's over here. They've stopped me from seeing my children numerous times for different reasons, serving plenary summonses and serving commercial liens and different things. And I was stopped every time I served paperwork from seeing my children for a number of weeks.
I wanted to ask you, Patricia, like, what's your situation now? Are you able to see them, or what's been going on?
At the minute, I've 2 hours a week that's supervised, and there's two social workers. Well, there's supposed to be two social workers sitting in a room at all times. I seen them there last week, and actually there was a woman had to travel from Longford and another had to travel from Ross Gray. And that was just to sit in a room with me and my three children while we tried having a bit of family time together. But we don't only have that. I've also... TUSLA has been coming in and out of my life for about 2 years now, Kevin. And they've left me and my kids living in unlivable conditions where I have water coming out through my light sockets and water coming down from my light fittings and my ceiling. I've an electrical fault with a leak coming on top of it. And trust the Child and Family Agency has walked in and out my house and left me living like this. But also to do with Laois County Council, because the head woman of Laois County Council, Miss Fionnuala Daly, is a registered social worker with TUSLA, and she's also acting as my housing officer, which is a conflict of interest.
Right. Now, your kids are. Tell us a little bit about your kids. How old are they, and how are they holding up to all this?
My eldest fella, he's nearly 12 now. He likes computers and football and different things. My little girl's 10, Caitlin. She likes her gymnastics and her music and makeup. And my youngest fella is 8. He's Jack. He's into boxing and rap music and different things. But the three pleasant, outgoing, well-mannered kids. But now since TUSLA took them, my kids have changed completely. They're not the same children that they were. My kids have actually been hospitalised more times since being in TUSLA care than they have ever been in my care.
Are they being harmed?
No, I can't say whether they're being harmed or not. Personally, myself, I don't think so. But my daughter, her eardrum just burst there a few weeks ago, and she ended up in hospital, and it was about 2 days later that I was told that she was actually hospitalised. Now, I also have Jean's name down as if anything happens and they can't contact me, that they contact Jean. But they haven't even contacted her in the amount of times my kids have been hospitalised since they left my care.
They're just shutting you out, in other words.
Yeah, they're shutting me out completely. They don't. I was supposed to get a phone call once or twice a week off them. The foster parents put in an objection to it because they don't think it's a good idea for the kids' health. But actually, it's doing more harm keeping my kids away from me than anything else, because my kids are the ones that's suffering here.
Right.
It's not easy, but also you have to think that TUSLA, Child and Family Agency, actually originated in Scotland. And it's only been known in Ireland since January 2014. And this year, already they've received like 726 million of a grant, and they're still looking for more money. But where is this money going? Because it's not going on our children. It's not going on protecting the families. It's going to keep kids away from them, to keep kids away from their families.
Foster for profit.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about TUSLA. What is it? Like, I understand it's not just doing this, but it's involved in other operations as a big corporation. Does anyone have any info on that?
Well, there's 72 different sponsors that sponsors TUSLA Child and Family Agency. There's 54 Irish sponsors. There's 6 sponsors of the United States in America, which is coming from Washington, D.C. There's 8 sponsors from England, which is coming from London City. There's 1 sponsor from Paris in France, and there's 3 sponsors in Scotland. And Scotland is actually where TUSLA actually originated from. The CEO of TUSLA, Mr. Fred McBride, was a previous social worker in Scotland before they moved to Ireland. And he had dealings with a 24-month-old Brendan Muir, where he was being beaten by his parents. And Mr. McBride actually left that young fella in their parents' care. And the young fella ended up getting better, bad that... The young fella ended up on a life support machine, and 24 hours later he died. And then Mr. Fred McBride became CEO of TUSLA in Ireland.
Wow. Well, let me ask folks also, in terms of your where things stand now, Patricia, you've been to court. What do you want to do now in terms of fighting back, getting your kids back? And let's talk about, you know, action and how people can help you.
I don't know. See, what's happening is I'm standing on a common law ground, and these people don't like that, because they want me to bow to them, basically. But I'm not going to do that. I'm going to keep standing my ground, and all I need people to do is just... I've been fighting for help for so long, Kevin, and I've asked even the government entities, the whole lot, I've asked the whole lot for help, and every one of them has refused me. All I need is just someone to help me and just to get my kids back and try to make sure that this doesn't happen to any other children in Ireland, because for any mother, this is a very heartbreaking thing to go through, to know that you give birth to three little children and then one day you come home and your kids are gone, and yep. you don't know whether you can get them back or whether they're going to give them back, or but you know you've done nothing wrong.
Well, it's a big business, trafficking children, and now the government and these private companies are doing it. So I wanted to ask Mary or John or Jean, like, do you want to talk about, I know you guys have been activists for a while. You've been involved in a campaign. I know, Mary, you were telling me about Dublin Says No or something. Do you want to say a little bit about the activism you've done? Yep.
Yeah, for 5 years ago, we set up to support a group called Ballyhay down in Cork. And they'd been active for 2 years prior to that. So they told us if Dublin didn't set up, then the rest of the country wouldn't wake up. So we decided it was Easter Sunday 5 years ago, and we start protesting in the streets of Dublin. But sure, we protested at the Dáil. We brought, have you heard of Halldór Torfason?
No.
He's the guy who started the revolution in Iceland.
Oh, yeah. You mean, this is about the banks and austerity and all that?
Yeah, well, he basically started a huge revolution in Ireland. He's a singer, and he was a musician and an actor. Okay. And he was very well known. So he went to the gates of the parliament over in Iceland. And once he put a call out, thousands and multiplied hundreds of thousands of people came. And that's how they brought in, bankers got jailed over there. So we thought, well, we'll bring him over to Ireland and we'll try to get to wake the people up. But sure, there wasn't enough people came out to protest. We were achieving, but then we were infiltrated by unionists, people from the unions and stuff like that, tried to break us down. But we did.
So what was the issue that you were campaigning on specifically? What were the things you were fighting on?
Austerity.
Oh, it's bank bailouts and austerity, basically poverty. Like, people are suffering really bad since the bank bailout.
Ireland's paying 42% of the
whole Europe.
Yeah, we pay the highest debt in Europe.
Europe, we have to pay 42% of the debt of Europe. So basically, we've taken up the tab of all the international debt.
Kevin, this is Vincent, another member.
Siphoned through Ireland at the moment, you know, and that's why Tussle are in here. All the corporations, the big business are in Ireland, and they're taking over slowly but surely all the
tax-free.
Oh, it's like a federal. It's like a federal government being put into Ireland at the moment, and they're taking over slowly but surely for profit.
With the results, there's over 8,000 people homeless in this country. And,
how many?
Over 8,000. Over 3,000 of them are children. There's 1,500 families that are in emergency accommodation at the moment. These people are being forced into private rented accommodation because they refuse to build social and affordable housing for these people. With the result, we have a housing assistance payment scheme in this country that the state gives you to help towards your rent. And if these people refuse to come out of these emergency accommodations into this HAP scheme, they are being threatened with TUSLA coming into the family. And there is actually 180,000 empty houses boarded up in this country at the moment that they refuse to open up to the public.
So this whole thing about toothless trafficking in children is part of a bigger picture here of these banks and others coming in to bleed the country dry, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Correct.
It's a global problem. It's happened in the United States. It's happened in Ireland. It's happened in Canada. Right. It's happened for a long, long time, but it seems to be becoming more prevalent here because we're just small enough and big enough to be corruptible enough in Ireland at the moment, you know?
Right.
Captain, we have another guy here who would like to have a word with you. This is our good friend Danny. He's our photographer.
Okay. Lean close to the mic. Whoever's ever speaking, lean close. Yep.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Hi.
I've been documenting Trisha's story from the beginning, from the time they carried out the Section 12 back in, I think it was September 2016.
Right.
I recorded all the phone calls that were coming in and out of the house and the connection between Laois County Council and Tusla and how they operate in these systems. These are like vulture systems. It's just like Vulture Bank, and this is why there's 180,000 empty houses in Ireland. They're allowing these outside vulture investors to come in and actually buy up as much as they can. And it seems to be like an area where Tricia comes from is pretty run down. It's what you might think of as subjugated into deprivation, where these people can carry out these. If you have problems with your house and you ring for assistance in your housing or come down repairs, or you make too much of a fuss, these guys can actually send Tesla to your door, and these guys can come in and carry out what they like. You know,
they're outside the law, in other words.
Oh, yeah, very much so. I mean, it turns out that Laois County Council actually wrote to the Law Society for anybody that had any dealings with Tusla and Laois County Council not to be accepted or have any free legal aid. I mean, this is only being carried out from last year, September last year, I think it was, John, was it? Yeah, you know, so these guys can actually talk to each other. The Law Society here in Ireland is actually a sponsor of Tusla. The guy that wrote the Ryan report in 1999, I think it was, 2001, Shatter. Is Alan Shatter, which he has a legal team here in Ireland. And, you know, these guys are all friends. It's a small country.
Yeah.
You said the Ryan report, that was pretty much the whitewash of the crimes by the Catholic Church, right, against the children.
Well, listen, this is state and church. The state were actually paying the church to do these things, and now the state is paying Tusla to come in and carry out the same type of things.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
The state won't even admit to its own past dealings with the likes of the Tomb Babies and all these things. I mean, I worked in archaeology for a number of years, and I've dug in Killeens, where they used to bury babies' bodies if they weren't imprisoned out in fields, little hills, and they'd put their bodies in fields to make sure that mothers would go along and register their babies quick enough the next time so they were on register.
Well, Danny, could you explain to the folks, we've talked about the Tomb mass burial site, could you just tell listeners who don't know about it what that was or is?
Well, this is where the laundries and all these institutions that were run by the church, when they were dealing with the women, you have to remember these were commodities. They were in and they were doing work in these laundries, and the laundries were making money out of them. They don't want to say that we're making money, but they were making money. And the babies that were being born from rapes and everything else in this country were, if they weren't in prison, if they didn't make it, they were being thrown into fields, into sewerage, into anything, septic tanks, anything they could, they didn't care. They literally put the baby in a shoebox and put the baby in a field. And when I dug one of the Killeens, I mean, you'd often see cuts into one body where didn't even know where these bodies were. So when they were digging another baby, they might cut into one to actually bury this baby and just throw the legs up on top of the other one. You know? The state
has been. No one's ever been charged or named.
No, but this is why this is all set up like this. You have to understand there's been two ruling parties in Ireland for the last 100 years. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. You understand? And these two parties have had their own ways for the last 100 years. And they've been running this state the way they want, you know. Ireland thinks it was independent, but it isn't. It was never as independent as it thinks. If you look into all the buildings in Ireland and the Royal Society connections, even the Dáil is paying to the Crown to actually have the Dáil or, in Kildare Street. Ireland is not independent like it thinks. Never was. You know, it was handed
to
the
Doyle, that's the institutions. Right? Just for people who don't know, that's your government. Doyle.
Ireland was handed to old British institutions to rule over itself. It never started up anything new. They don't even know their history properly, for Christ's sake, over here. You know, the flag is meant to be green, white, and gold, but most people on St. Patrick's Day has a green, white, and orange.
Right. Well, let me ask anyone who wants to answer this. About the campaign that you think might be possible to build around getting Patricia's children back and stopping these attacks by Tusla. Any ideas of what steps you want to take next?
Listen, all we can do is exhaust the systems here in the courts and then hopefully get to the European courts, because literally this stuff has been going on so long about hiding and, brushing it aside. And, these politicians here are, they have no...
Yeah.
They've no empathy towards the people at all. You know, as soon as they get up high enough, they're off on their thing with the, you know, looking after Bilderbergs or whatever connection abroad.
Unfortunately, Kevin, and it's going to cost money and funds to go any further with this and to take it as far as we can. And we're just normal people. And up until now, we've been putting money together so that Patricia can put these cases.
Well, one thing you have potentially is numbers. I mean, I remember Mary telling me about the... You had a lot of people out at your protest, right?
Sorry, Kevin?
You had a lot of people out. I was saying you may not have money, but you have numbers. You have the you have people who could potentially be on your side and make a stink. You were saying they had a big, a lot of people coming out.
We had well over 100,000, not the whole country, but a vast amount of people. But then we were infiltrated by the union. A union guy came in and he tried to take over and put up a big stage and big bandstands and big speeches, and people just got sick and walked away.
Really? There's a lot of outside interest in Ireland. That's...
Kevin, another thing there I meant to say to you, we actually did a protest on the Pro-Cathedral. You'd be aware of the Pro-Cathedral?
Pro-Cathedral, yeah. Infamous, yeah.
In Marlborough Street, yeah?
Yeah.
Where the bishop, mm-hmm. would say, the bishop would say Mass on Easter Sunday and Christmas and that.
So was that Dermot Martin?
I got together and we put a protest.
Dermot Martin, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I had a run-in with him.
While the bishop was saying Mass, we wrote it on white T-shirts and we sat in the aisles, and then as he went to make a speech, we walked up to the front of the altar and we stood in front of him.
Excellent.
So he could see on our T-shirts and the people behind us could see what was there.
And what
was
on the T-shirts was "Remember the Stolen Babies and the Babies of Chew." And he couldn't even look at us, he just put his head down.
So the problem in Ireland at the moment, the church is still involved. Of the bigger things like hospitals, like Dermot Martin is the chairperson now of the National Children's Hospital at the moment, you know, so the church is still heavily involved in the state bodies and entities, you know, and that's what we need to expose is actually that they've had too much control, but they know the church can't control the government anymore, but the government are putting their own statutes and acts in play to actually stop people, you know, to actually mention anything or stand up to them, you know, they use everything in their power.
Including, of course,
Patricia, I got a question that just came in over the board from a listener. It said, can your children not go to a relative or a friend?
No. I actually don't talk to any of my family, whoever that listener is. No, I don't talk to any of my family. I have no family support. I never did have any family support. I was... I had a quite an emotional abusive background, and it's only recently that I've started to come out and talk about all this, but I never had any family help or support. If I did have family help and support, things might not have got as bad as it did, but no, unfortunately, I wouldn't be lucky enough to have family support like a lot of other people would actually have out there.
What about in the community? Or have people rallied around you at all? Have you got any press coverage, anything like that?
No. Well, I had a press coverage from a podcast, Sean Maguire Show, there up until yourself, Kevin. But yourself and Sean Maguire were the only two people that would actually air my show, and no one else wanted anything to do. Because there's a gagging order on a lot of journalists from the high courts that if they expose anything got to do with family law, that they'd be fined up to €50,000 and imprisoned for 3 years. So a lot of them have actually backed away from family law cases.
They told the journalists that they're going to face imprisonment if they take on family law.
Yeah, there's an ex parte injunction served on the journalists in Ireland to prevent them from actually saying anything about anything got to do with family law courts or children or anything like that.
That sounds like an admission of guilt by the state that they're involved in something not very legal.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I sat in the High Courts myself in Dublin there about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and there was John and Jean and Mary and the cameraman, and they were all there, but they were actually put under a gagging order from Judge Costello, and she was told that the kids' names weren't to be mentioned and nothing was to be mentioned outside the court, and she cleared the courthouse of everybody else, so it was only myself. She actually implemented the in-camera rule in the high courts, when the in-camera rule is only a rule and not a legality. It never existed in the beginning, and that's where all the corruption is going on, is in the in-camera rule cases.
Right. Now, you know, this Judge Costello and others, they know the law, and they know that they're personally liable for any harm that might come to your children as a result of their order. That needs to be put in their face. I know we talked a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, she does. She said that actually that the Oireachtas in Ireland actually made up the rules for the family courts, that she didn't have the jurisdiction first and foremost over the district court or the circuit court, but there was no way that she was going to overrule the Oireachtas and their judgment on the family law cases.
Again, we're using British law systems, though. We're using bar law systems, which are really trading in money and not people, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Well, can I elaborate on that point there? Just that brings in the issue of the separation.
John.
Sorry, Kevin, to cut across there.
Just to bring in
the issue, a constitutional issue of the separation of powers doctrine, just on the basis of what Patricia explained there, that the High Court Judge Costello argued she'd no authority. Now, she did have authority. We obviously have three organs of state here in Ireland. In most common law jurisdictions, there's a separation of powers doctrine system, constitutional doctrine system. Its whole purpose is to prevent issues of potential corruption. Okay, so in my analysis of the judiciary at the moment, as I explained earlier, there's a great emphasis on, we're going to uphold statutes. We're going to create more statutes. We're going to create more depravity, poverty. We're going to bring mayhem upon the people of our nation. At the end of the day, the state here within the constitutional safeguards would argue that they have obligations to protect and vindicate the rights of all its citizens in Ireland, and it's doing exactly the opposite. So here we have issues around the separation of powers doctrine, where a judge said, I can't rule against the Dáil, when it was quite clear that there was issues brought before her, and she did actually have the authority to at least examine the issues that Patricia had raised in the High Court. She had made every effort to ignore her. She didn't address any questions. She didn't address any issues of law. Patricia had created an affidavit showing breaches of law. I observed that the judge had read it intently for about 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes. And she didn't pass any comment on the affidavit. Now, under the judiciary system, it tells us that if an affidavit is not rebutted, or it's not argued upon, or it's argued that the judiciary in this case feels there's something wrong with it, it's deemed to be a statement of truth. So here we have a situation where breaches of law were confirmed in an affidavit before the High Court, and yet the High Court judge refused to act upon them accordingly, okay? Upholding statutes, upholding Roman civil law. Verification is quite clear. Ireland is a common law jurisdiction.
Right.
And if we don't have the common law, our constitution means nothing. And clearly this is what the state is at the moment, particularly around its actions of Tusla. Yeah, that it's circumventing the common law, and it's acting from a statutory
authority, not common law, clearly.
Absolutely. And as a result, it's rendering our constitution useless, and the constitutional safeguards that should protect the citizens of this country are being circumvented or being overruled. Yeah. So in essence, the judiciary is not acting up to its responsibilities. The state,
and from what everyone's saying, it sounds like it's like in many places, it's an unaccountable system. There's no way of holding these people accountable under their present system.
Correct. I'd like to elaborate on that, if I may, for a moment, on your point there, Kevin. We in the Irish Free State Constitution, prior to our original 1937 Constitution, Article 48 verified that we had a direct democracy in Ireland, okay? Or direct democracy was afforded to the people of Ireland, which meant that the Irish people could hold the government of that time, or successive governments, as the case may be, to account by vetoing actions that they might take under a statutory law provision. In other words, something that they sought, a referendum or a tax, or in this case, the issues of taking children away from families, which is a clear breach of the Constitution, clear breaches what they're about, you know. And as a result, in that history of that time, they took direct democracy away. They used another article in the Irish Free State Constitution to overrule or to repeal direct democracy. So all of a sudden, there was no accountability. All of a sudden, the people couldn't address issues before the state of that time, and quite frankly, up to this present day. And on your point there, Kevin, as a result, we have no accountability to what's going on over many issues that we're dealing with here in Ireland.
Let me throw this out. We've got less than 10 minutes, so, and we're going to carry this on. You folks are definitely going to have to come back soon on the show because there's a lot more to talk about. But I want to ask, first of all, Patricia, I want to give you an opportunity to just say the most important thing on your mind right now. And if there's a way that people can contact you or your group to give you support, maybe you could say that now on the air.
Yeah, well, Kevin, all I want is my kids to come home. I'm afraid of my kids' welfare at the minute, considering they're after being hospitalised a lot more times since being in Tusla's care. I don't believe that Tusla is fit to be actually taking care of these children. I do believe strongly that we do need social workers, because there is little children out there that does need support, but they should be there to support the mothers and fathers with their children, and not to come in and actually take their children away from them. They should actually act out. Tusla has been acting out under the Child Care Act 1991, which was actually repealed in the Child Care Act 2013, and it was never actually repealed with anything else. So Tusla is actually going and taking children by the okay of their Oireachtas in Ireland through closed courts, and there's no one being held accountable for any of it. All I want is for my kids to be returned home and for justice to be done for what these people are after doing. They're emotionally and mental torture that my kids have been put under in the past 6 months. When they actually okayed for my kids to be examined for sexual abuse, they actually okayed for forensic examinations and samples to be taken, photographic images to be taken. My kids are three minor kids under the age of 12 years of age, and I know personally from a woman's perspective it's not a very nice thing, so I can't imagine it being very nice for three small children to actually have to be put through this in this day and age as well. And since the 15th of November 2017, Tusla Child and Family Agency has been acting out under a 17.2 of the Child Care Act 1991, which is actually stating that my kids were actually homeless. But my kids were never homeless. My kids always had their house to go to. So it just goes to prove that Tusla and the headwoman for Nuala Daly of Laois County Council have been conversing together to actually try and conspire myself and my kids and to keep my kids away from me.
It's a criminal conspiracy. They're guilty under the law. And I want to ask anybody, in the last 5 minutes we have left, anybody want to say anything who hasn't had a chance yet, especially in relation to what people can do to help you folks in this campaign?
Just to say that Patricia needs a lot of funding, and with these court proceedings that are in play, any help at all that any of your listeners could actually help. She has a GoFundMe page up and running there, and maybe you could help in some way.
Do you want to give the link to that page? Do you want to give the contact info?
To be able to contact my own Facebook page, ARDU space EIRE is my name. Ardu Era. Anyone has any anything they want to say or any questions they want to ask or any information that they want passed over, that is no problem. They can also contact me at irelandsaoirse78@gmail.com is my email address. And any help that anyone can give, let it be support or any help in any way, I'd be very much grateful.
Okay, so the Facebook name again is EIRE for Ireland, that first word, and then ARDU. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else want to say anything?
I'd just like to make one thing. With these children in Tuzla's care at the minute, a lot of questions have to be looked at with Tuzla and how they're actually dealing with these children. I deal with a lot of the homeless here in Dublin, and in two-week period, Tuzla had released 12 children from their care at 18 years of age straight onto the streets of Dublin. A lot of these children are actually getting into prostitution and everything else, you know. So, I mean, this stuff needs to be taken serious, you know. And I hope your listeners grasp that, you know, all children deserve a chance.
The gravity of it.
Yeah, the right. Gravity, you know. Thank you all for listening.
Kevin.
All right, and we're going to do the show again soon. I want to especially talk about what people have done in other countries is forming common law courts and tribunals in their own countries when the courts and the governments aren't serving the people. So I'd like to maybe talk about that. Anyone have any thoughts on that? We've got about 4 minutes left.
I'll let John, you know the comment.
Well, I mean, we're... In reference to the law, we're looking at some way to strengthen our arguments against the system that's failing us here. As I verified again, I'll repeat myself one more time. Our judiciary appears to be continually implementing Roman civil law, and they're not examining issues of constitutional safeguards that should protect the interests of citizens of Ireland. Now, concerning the common law, we obviously want to look into that more. I've done a lot of research on international law, European law, human rights instruments. And there's a strong indication as well that the state here is trying to circumvent those international laws as well that would offer protections
right.
to the citizens of Ireland, particularly under European law. I mean, we're supposed to be a member of the European Union. And from research, it indicates that apparently European law doesn't apply to the state, but apparently it applies to us.
Right.
In other words, if it's beneficial to them, it works. If it's not, it doesn't.
They ignore the rules whenever they like. It's
Now, folks,
I want to thank you all, Patricia, Mary, John, Jean, Danny, and anybody else I missed. I want to thank you all for being with us, and I want you to come back on very soon in the next few weeks, and we carry this on again. Patricia, Godspeed, and strength to you, you know?
Thanks very much, Kevin, for getting my story out there, and thanks to all your listeners for listening as well, and I hope that justice will be got soon, and...
We'll keep you updated.
Yeah, we will.
Okay. Thank you so much for all of you. We'll talk to you real soon.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin. God bless you. Bye-bye.
From Ireland. Now, if you folks want to help them directly, write to thecommonland@gmail.com. We'll hook you up. We've got a lot of contacts, actually, acting on their own over in Ireland. We're trying to pull them all together to support this campaign, to stop Tuzla, to regain our children, to reestablish the common law and people's sovereignty in Ireland like everywhere. And we'll be back next week. That's the 25th. Please tune in, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and 11 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. And don't forget, 7 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time on Freedom Talk Radio Scotland is also our show. We're going to end with a song by Sinead O'Connor, a women warrior song. It's in Gaelic, our language. And until next week, all of you out there, stay strong, stay clear, and stand by each other. That's our strength. Bye for now.